Folks, if you're liking what you're getting from 30 MPC, the number one way you can support us is by subscribing to our newsletter. Every week, you only get two emails. On Monday, you get a content roll-up of everything that dropped last week. And on Fridays, I pick one topic and I personally write a deep dive on things like how to cold call, how to run a discovery call, or even how to hire an AE. So if you're liking what you're getting here, take 2 seconds, go to the show notes. You'll see a button to subscribe to our newsletter, or you can go to 30mpc.com/newsletter and do it there. We'll catch you soon. Cheers.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. I'm your host, Nick Sigelski, joined by my co-host, Jen Allen Knuth. And today, we have Maddie Jackson, who is an AE over at Webflow. Jen, why should people listen?
So this interview took an unexpected turn. We got really deep into how you sell when you've got two very different buying roles that are involved in the decision. I absolutely love this one. Learned a ton. This will be a great one to listen to.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. If you get an email and the action required on that email is going to take you less than 2 minutes to do it on the spot. It's not worth adding it to your to-do list, having to look at the item, remember what you need to do. That's going to take you more than 2 minutes anyway. So do it on the spot, get it off your plate. Now, we documented our best templates and tips to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that documentation for free at the link in the show notes.
This week's actionable prospecting tactic is from Sixth Sense, who shows you the prospects who are most likely to buy so you can get more meetings with fewer activities. Personalizing cold emails requires you to only change the first paragraph in a trigger template. All you have to do is tie the research to the problem you solve in paragraph one, and then switch that out while you leave paragraphs two and three, your solution and call to action, exactly the same. And so we are giving you six of these trigger templates with our partners at Sixth Sense. The link is in the show notes.
Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes.
This actionable competitive tactic from Clue is the trap question. Steer discovery toward the winning zone. If we're competing with a podcast that has no newsletter or webinar series, we might ask a trap question like, how do you figure out if those podcast listeners are making their way to your mailing list? And when you're in a head-to-head, there's no better way to prepare for your next competitive battle than with our trap questions and battle card templates from our friends at Clue. The link's in the show notes.
And a three, a two, a one, roll the tape. All right, Maddie, welcome to the show. We start every single episode with your top three actionable takeaways. So let's get your three.
My first one is to make the first line of a cold email all about them, them being the prospect whose attention you are trying to get with the email. Reason being, it's likely that is all that they read before opening or deleting the email on a phone. Pull it up. You just see one line before you actually make the decision to click in. People also have a natural tendency to correct incorrect information, so don't stress too much about getting it wrong. It does also help you earn trust, so putting the time in to understand who you're reaching out to earns the time that it takes for them to read the email. A couple of examples. I'm in web sales, so I work for a company called Webflow. One thing I would say is, hi prospect, notice that your website is currently failing core web vitals. That could negatively impact your conversion rates via web signups. Then I would go into Webflow, what we do and who we work with, why they should give us some time. Another example could be, hi prospect, saw that you recently acquired X company and that your websites are built on two different systems. That could be causing inefficiencies managing a content and creating a unified brand across multiple systems.
Beautiful. What's number two?
Number two is very simple. It's ask to meet sooner. This is something that I picked up reading the book Amp It Up by Frank Slootman. The basis is that when you're setting up a next step, always very important, of course, to set that next step while you have someone on a call. It is human tendency to consider that they might be busy and maybe suggest something that's in a few days or even the next week. Asking to meet tomorrow, or in very rare cases, like maybe later that day, shortens the deal cycle and it keeps up that valuable momentum. An example of this is I've actually met with someone in the morning, and it was a prospect. It was someone who was an individual contributor. They told me about the problems that they faced and that their manager would be interested in learning more. I said, great. Do they have time to talk this afternoon so that I can understand what they're facing? And then we can set up the demonstration after I've spoken to both of you.
Love it. Round us out, Maddie. What's number three?
Number three is the give gets equilibrium. And this is the importance of making sure that you are getting something back from the prospect when you're giving something. Really important because negotiation starts at the very beginning of the deal cycle. So always try to think, what am I giving in this step? Am I giving them collateral? Am I giving them trial access? Am I giving them access to a solutions engineer or a technical resource? And then what am I getting back? So if you're thinking about aligning the right resources with the right resources, then you're going to be moving the deal cycle along in a more fair and equitable way. Really important to frame this in a specific way, which means that you frame it as why it's valuable for the prospect and not just something that you need. An example of this is with bringing an SE onto a demonstration, saying, really important that we have the right technical folks on your side because I know that they're going to be involved in the deal and we want to make sure that we get them all of the answers that they need and that we're saving time rather than having to burn through multiple different meetings and bring multiple people on. So let me know who is in charge of like the technical criteria on your side. Happy to reach out to them and make sure that it's a time that works for all of us.
Oh, I really like that one because that's a great way to also start to multi-thread with a whole different function that's going to be involved in your sale. Talk to me more about this give, get thing, because when we were preparing for this, you actually had an entire sheet of like all the things that your prospects ask you for, things that you might give. But then you had also brainstormed an entire list of things that you could ask for your get. To me about what the gets you have out there are and how you determine what you're going to ask a prospect for.
A couple of ones that I think come up in quite a few sales cycles would be something like trial access being a give. So that is something that we are giving access to the prospect for. And in order to line that up with the right get, you want to make sure that it's something that falls within the same stage of the sales cycle. So at that point, one that I like to use is a mutual engagement plan or a mutual action plan. And a way to frame that would be, absolutely, we can get you trial access. Sometimes we give trial access and we don't have a plan of what's going to happen within that trial, a dates that we're going to map to you, meeting throughout the trial to make sure that you're fully supported, that our team is fully supporting you. Let's map out what's going to happen throughout the trial and then beyond if all of the criteria is met, what it looks like for us to go into that procurement cycle.
Say I'm a brand new seller or I'm someone who's thinking about going into a highly technical sale. Can you share a few things that having done that, having moved into a job like that, what are some things you should just expect to be asked as gives from the customer? What are the most common ones that come up?
Specifically with highly technical products, I think access to engineering or product resources on your side. Security is also one that quite often comes up. And a trial access, like I mentioned, I think that's probably the number one thing that they're going to want to do to validate your product, especially if it's something that they can't access online and have a freemium version. I'm lucky right now at Webflow, we do have, it's product-led growth. So there's a lot of ways for people to play around with the product before. But in previous sales cycles, when I was at Procore selling into the construction industry, trials were very common.
One of the biggest gets I presume you are asking for, on the pre-show, we were talking about how you sell to two really different types of buyer and both has to be involved in your sale. You've got your marketing folks who they're the ones who want to make the website look pretty and have all of these case studies and all of these awesome tabs and resources, etc. And then you've got these technical folks who are actually like implementing, designing, etc., the website. And those personalities can be really different. One of the things I assume is that you might have a marketing leader who's raw Webflow and pour hours into talking with that person. But if you don't also win over the technical people, you might be working a deal that they like literally cannot even implement and wasting your time. And so I'm curious about, let's say you've got a marketing leader. How are you getting access to the technical folks? And what are you doing with those people to make sure that they become a green light to help move your sale forward rather than a red or yellow light?
Couldn't have said it better. That's definitely the day-to-day that I work through in most of my deal cycles. And the goal of Webflow is really to empower the marketing team to be able to work quickly without the engineering team. So I think it's really important for us to frame it in a certain way and go about it in a certain way of what is the value that each individual is getting out of Webflow. With engineering, it could be you have more time to focus on core product development. rather than framing it as the engineering process today is broken. It's taking up a lot of time. There's a lot of design review cycles and perhaps miscommunication between marketing and engineering, framing it as the positive. Now marketing is going to be on a system that you trust. We're going to fully technically vet it with you to make sure that it can do everything that the engineering team has historically built and the hosting secure. Marketing is going to be empowered to move quickly, iterate, explore, test, while engineering can focus on core product development. And to your other question, Nick, about how to get access, because you are right, typically it is marketing that we're talking to first. I like to lay it out and just say, hey, I understand that right now engineering is the one who owns the website and they're the ones building and doing most of the process. In my experience, they're going to want to be involved in the evaluation. Even though it's a marketing tool and it might be coming out of marketing's budget, really important that those who are involved today and owning that process, that they vet this out, because there will be an implementation and handoff process.
I want to make this really real. We are Webflow customers at 30 Minutes to President's Club right now, but let's pretend that I wasn't. Let's pretend that I came to you, Maddie, and I said, Maddie, I want to be able to embed every single podcast episode we've ever done live on a page, and I want to put on a special search bar so people can search for any topic in sales and they'll be directed to the right episode. And I come to you with all these big visionary things I want to do with my website. And I'm the marketing guy. And then you say, Nick, awesome. We can do all of this. Sounds great. I found that usually the technical folks are going to need to be involved in some capacity. And I say, you're right. Intro you to my CTO. Get on a call with that person. How are you running that introductory call with this technical person?
Most important thing in that case, and I think in just about every sales cycle, is how does that process work today? Hi, Mr. CTO. So nice to meet you. These are the things that Nick wants to do with the website to improve, I'm assuming, user experience, make it easier to search and filter and find the right episodes. What would that process look like today with your team who currently owns the website? And then going from there, based on if there's some specific pain that they're running into, some reasons why you haven't done that yet, spinning that into the value prop for Webflow.
How often do you find that the technical buyer versus the marketing buyer have two totally different opinions around the priority level of this? And what do you do when you've got like a marketing champion who's, let's go, and then you've got your IT buyer who's, let's pump the brakes?
Yeah, that's where it becomes more of like organizational discovery, I would say, rather than technical or product discovery, and helping understand with whoever's willing. It might be the engineering team. It might be the marketing team. More often, it's the marketers. What is the value of Webflow? What's the impact? Let's put a business case together, right? Let's understand and quantify the human hours saved for your engineering team and the impact of potentially getting these campaigns out sooner so that we can then present it to the folks who are going to ultimately decide.
Can you talk to me about the quantification side of things? Are you asking the engineering team about how long it might take to update a web page today and then literally getting into the math of hours saved? Talk to me about the quantifying side of the deal.
So that's definitely part of it. It's definitely not all of it, but we will ask the marketing team, how long does it take if you want to produce this one landing page today? And often it's weeks, not minutes or hours, which is what it would be in Webflow. So that's quite a good tangible way to quantify time savings and efficiency. But the other thing that's a little bit more difficult to quantify is, what do you have coming up on your roadmap? And how important is it for us to nail these launch deadlines, and why? And often it's centered around a product release or a new campaign or a big event that they have. And trying to quantify what would happen if we didn't hit that. What would happen if the project got delayed? If something on product became a priority, and the engineers who you might be working with had to go work on the product.
How much of that is possible for you to find out before you get on the phone with your engineering partner? Is the marketing person that you're working with, are they seeing that? Are you looking elsewhere? Like, how do you show up to that call with that information, or don't you? Yeah.
Usually we're trying to get as much information from the marketing people. And this is also a great way for us to champion test, to understand what they're willing to arm us with, what they're willing to share within the process. Again, with the give gets, going back to that, if we're getting information on the current process, absolutely, I will give them a business case. I will go through an ROI study with them to make sure that we're helping them quantify the impact of Webflow so that they can bring that to their superiors.
Okay, you just said something that I absolutely love and I don't hear a lot, which is the phrase champion test. So for someone who's not familiar with that, what does champion testing mean? And what are you doing on your side to actually test the validity of a champion?
Champion testing is something that I think is really important. And to be honest, something that I historically did not do until I got burned on a few deals where I thought that I might have had a champion. And then I realized that they were more of an influencer. So what I would say a champion has, like, political and technical clout. They have the ability and knowledge to get a deal done for Webflow. And they have personal pain and win within the situation. To test, I think it's really important to understand what sort of political and technical clout they have in the organization. So great way to test is, you said that your CMO is going to be the person signing off on this. They have the budget. Can you get us a meeting with them? Mm-hmm. If they can't, then they have failed the test. And you know that you might need to find someone else to round out your champion. It could be multiple folks. It's not always just one person. But then you know that you might not have the solid champion who has the ability to get the deal done for you.
So what do you do in this scenario? So I've had 14 meetings with Jen, and I've given her 12 demos. I've sent over 18 case studies. And then it turns out Jen's like, CMO, I don't think, let's hold off on that for now. Other than sitting there and seething, what are you going to do? Are you going to just, like, cold call the CMO? Are you going to try to find someone else, maybe at the director level, who might be a champion? Are you going to try to have Jen introduce you to folks that, like, eventually you meet enough people and there's a big enough consensus that you get up to the CMO? When you find out you have an influencer, not a champion, how do you get to that power?
Yeah, I think the first and most important thing is to ask that second and third question to understand just how deep of a hole you've dug, which is the first one that I like to ask is, great, is the CMO even aware that you're speaking to Webflow? Are they aware that this evaluation is going on? Because if not, then you know that you have a lot more work to do. And this might have just been a side project of interest. If yes, then it's, okay, who do they trust? Who are they leaning on to make this decision? And how can I talk to them?
That's actually very smart, because there's a big difference between a end user who's decided to go off on their own side project of investigating stuff versus a mandate from the CMO telling an end user to go investigate all of these things. And what you're doing is, before you jump to how do I solve this, how do I get in front of the CMO, you're figuring out what context that person even has in the first place, correct?
Yes. So to go a little bit deeper there, what I would say is, if the CMO doesn't have context and they might not be aware, the end buyer, or the organizational, the end decision maker, it's great. You have someone who's interested, and I would work with your SDR, BDR, or yourself, and go back to the drawing board. And in that case, I would go back to prospecting. I would use it as a warm lead.
I too used to treat anybody that was interested in our product as a champion. And it's a much higher bar, as you described. I love the way you described that. And I think one of the mistakes I made was I put too much power, perhaps, in the hands of someone who was interested, but not credible or motivated to socialize it. Question number one is, has that ever happened to you? And two, what do you do differently now to avoid getting into those circumstances where you don't have to end up making that awkward decision of, do I call their boss and risk getting in trouble? Like, how do you avoid that when you're engaging with people who are interested, but maybe not champion level?
To answer question number one, of course, Jen, it has happened. Please say yes. Yes, it has. And it has happened to me in the worst of ways, where at the very end of a deal cycle, I was told, I am the signer, send it to me. No one else has to look at this. You send the DocuSign, you commit the deal, it's the end of the quarter, and then you find out that they did not have signing power and that there's someone else who needs to be pulled in. And then the deal pushes. And I think what I learned, especially from that, is, again, on the testing front, ask, what else have you purchased? What does the software purchasing process look like at your company? And when is the last time that you signed off on a contract? Had I asked those questions, I would have understood that they actually did have a chief product officer who needed to review, even though this person might have had the power once they got the green light from them.
I have a question for both of you, because this is a scenario that's tripped me up a lot and frankly still trips me up in my sale right now, which is, I'll meet somebody. Right now I sell to marketers, and you're right, a lot of the times it is the CMO who's the person that's signing off on things, but I'll have a director of demand gen that comes inbound and they decide to meet with me. And I feel like if I get to a place where I'm stuck with that person and know I need to get higher, I feel like I'm going around my contact, and I feel like I'm going to risk burning them to go up higher. And then half the time, if I do go up higher, they send me back down to this person who's then just pissed off at me. And I feel like I might be able to avoid that if I acted differently, or if I gave less credit or power to this director that I'm meeting with. And I'm wondering if either of you have any advice for how I might handle that.
One thing I think the advice portion is be really skeptical, even though you get happy ears. This happens to me all the time. This is why I love deal reviews, working with my team and making sure that I get other people's eyes on it so they can pick apart this director or champion or buyer who I might think that I'm working with. And then an example of what I would do in that case and what I have done that I've found to be effective when you're worried that you're going to be burned if you go around someone who you've built this relationship with is leverage your internal resources. Here at Webflow, we have such a wonderful executive suite with a lot of talent and a rich history of building great companies. So I could ask Linda, our chief operating officer, or Alan, our CTO, who was previously at Shopify and a lot of people have incredible respect for, to reach out to the person who might actually have the buying power and just drop an executive note. Hi, my name is Alan. Heard that you're working with Maddie. Really excited to be partnering with you for XYZ reasons. Let me know if you ever need anything. And that's a way to test if they're aware of the project without burning yourself in the process.
That's a great, softer way than us going ahead of it. I think I have such scar tissue. My worst sales story was I was working like a Fortune 200 deal for 8 months and then realized I was falling into that same trap of it was not a champion at all. He had no influence. Nobody else knew he was looking into it. So I did go above his head to the right person, sent an email, got a reply. I was like, I'm in business. And then that guy called my boss. He called me. I wept on the phone. He was screaming at me because he was like, no one knew I was looking into this. So had I asked your question that you suggested, I could have avoided it completely. I think now what I do is when you show someone a solution on the first call, they automatically assume that now they own it, right? So one of the things I'm testing for in call number one is let's stay in problem land, because if you can only tell me your side of the story and you can't tell me like engineering side of the story or whoever the other buying group member side of the story are, I know that you are probably in isolation thinking this is a problem, but we might not have organizational buy-in. So if I don't show them the solution up front, it avoids them from believing that they are the quote unquote owner of it. And that's just the way that I avoided and protected it, because then I could ask, okay, now who has a different opinion than you on this matter? And then that's good for me to know and roadblocks that I'm up against.
Maddie, I want to ask you about the end of the deal cycle. We were doing some pre-show chat about negotiating, and you have a very focused way that you tackle your negotiations. So let's say I'm your buyer. I have a Zoom with you. I've got a big smile on my face, and I say, Maddie, great news. You're our vendor of choice. We're ready to move forward. What happens next?
I actually have a framework that I was taught by a sales leader who I deeply respect, Maggie Haught, and it's the 4 W's of negotiation. So at that point, I would start thinking about the 4 W's. And those are what, why, who, and when. What being, okay, we're entering into contracting. What are they hoping to see? What can they budge on, potentially give you the best shot at offering a discount? Maybe it's multi-year. Maybe it's buying ahead of growth. Maybe it's logo rights or case study. Why that's important for them? Because often people will ask for a discount and it's great. Why is that important to you? Help me understand whether it's cash flow or total ownership. Would you prefer to have net 15 payments one time with a discount, or could we keep the ARR but potentially divide it up into multiple payments? Why is that important to them? The who, this is the really important one, especially talking about how I was burned that one time. Who is going to look at this order form? Who is going to sign it? Who is going to do legal review? And then at the end, making sure when, which is the simplest, you know, when can this happen? When will each step of that process that we just laid out happen? A great way to ask this without undermining their authority is simple talk track, saying in this recent economy, we have all been seeing all kinds of new buying committees popping up. I often hear that the CFO is the new CEO. Prospect, can I ask who might need to be involved in approving this before it is signed? For example, does your CFO, and maybe have the CFO's name handy, need to look at this?
Probably, Maddie, because our CFO, Jen's been looking at everything, but why don't you just send it over to me and then I'll take care of things with Jen. Don't you worry about it. How would you respond to that?
This is one where I'd lean on my leadership and make them the scapegoat in this case. I'd say, totally wish I could, Nick, but if your CFO is going to be the signer, in order to actually get any sort of discounts or concessions or incentives that we've discussed approved, we're going to need to check off the box that we've spoken to them directly. In order to get you the best possible proposal, can you please sponsor a meeting between myself and your CFO?
Oh, that's really good. You basically are citing leadership, organizational policy in order to have any sort of gives. Again, going back to your give-get philosophy as a way to get in front of that CFO.
Exactly.
Can I ask you how you run that meeting with the CFO? Because
Are you giving them a demo? Are you giving a whole like ROI calculation? Are you basically there to just talk about contractual terms? Do you present? Does your champion present? What the heck goes into that CFO?
Hopefully at this point, you have a strong enough champion that they can tell you exactly how to run that CFO meeting. Hopefully the CFO does not need to see a demo and that I've uncovered that earlier on in the deal cycle so that we've already gone through that step and they were someone who was part of that evaluation. And really, they're just there to understand what the proposal is and get the best terms. But I would say to answer your question with a no answer, lean on your champion to understand exactly how to run that. Is it going to land best if we come in and present this, or should we work with you to prep them for the meeting and then hold one final contract meeting?
We're running out of time and we got to move to our final question. And the final question is this. We've talked about a lot of really great things salespeople should be doing. Now I got to ask you about a shouldn't. And so my last question for you is, what is one bad habit that you see a lot of salespeople exhibiting that you think they need to break because it hurts them more than it helps?
One bad habit that I see reps making, and I've definitely made it myself, is trying to make themselves look good. And this ties into both internal and external throughout the sales cycle. So with prospects, I find they have a very heightened sense for BS. They're always aware when you're trying to sell to them versus trying to solve their problem. So if you don't know the answer, don't make up an answer. Just say, completely understand. That's the question. This is why. Get some clarifying context. I'll come back to you and I'll bring the right people to the next call. Internally, I think it's really important. One of my favorite phrases that we say a lot around Webflow is we should always win together. We should always lose together. If something is going sideways on your deal and you just keep forecasting it and committing it and thinking it's something you can tackle alone, don't do that. Don't try to make yourself the hero. Bring everybody in so that if it does go sideways, you can correct it as a team rather than failing and trying to preserve ego.
I love it. Maddie, thank you for joining us. Everybody stick around for a 60-second recap coming up soon.
Thank you for having me.
Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Woodpecker. When you're sending a sales email, you generally want to avoid putting punctuation in the subject line. If you've got an exclamation point, it makes it seem like you're shouting at them, look at this amazing offer, and a question mark just smells salesy, so avoid punctuation. Now, if you want to steal my full sales cadence from my friends at Woodpecker, there's a link in the show notes for you to go get it and try it for free. Today's deal acceleration cheat code is brought to you by Pipedrive, which is a CRM built by sellers for sellers. The best way to drive your pipeline forward is to every single day pull up a list of all of your open opportunities and look at each opportunity by stage and think, what can I do today that will increase my likelihood of winning this deal? That's how you keep your ops moving forward in between meetings that you have on the calendar. Now, we documented 5 cheat codes that can help you cut your sales cycle in half with Pipedrive. There's a link in the show notes to steal them.
Today's tactic to triple your connect rate is brought to you by Rocket Reach, who provides data that lets you reach out to the right person at the right account at the right time. Every time you're reaching out to an account, pull down the contacts again. Yes, I know it sucks, but the average tech tenure is 2 years, which means 50% of the workforce turns over every year. So look up the account, pull anyone who was hired, and scratch anyone who was left. And one way you can pull verified and accurate data is with Rocket Reach. So if you like this, check out their toolkit on 8 ways to triple your cold call connects in the show notes.
Otter AI's Autopilot for Sales gives you the freedom to sell on your discovery calls by taking notes for you. One of the best ways to deepen your discovery is to ask your prospect about the impetus behind their goals. So when a prospect tells me they want to advertise on more sales podcasts, I'll say, well, it's not every day that you wake up and decide you want to sponsor a podcast. What's causing you to even explore this in the first place? Now, we put together the ultimate discovery checklist with our friends at Otter AI, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes. Your top 4 actionable takeaways from this episode with Maddie Jackson. Number 1, if you feel like you have leverage in a deal, but you have not gotten in front of the CFO and feel like you need to present to them, literally use that as a non-negotiable in order for you to even negotiate or have any sort of commercial concessions. Get yourself in front of the CFO and then use that as the reason that you might even negotiate with them in the first place. Number 2, Maddie talked a lot about gives and gets. And while you can steal hers, it's probably good for you to sit down for 12 and a half minutes and think about, what are all of the potential gets that I could ask for from my buyer as a way to advance my deal? That way, when you're in the heat of battle on a call, you're not sitting there scrambling, thinking, what could I ask for here?
Number 3, just because someone is a fan of our solution or our company does not mean that they will be an effective champion. So do what Maddie suggested and ask questions to champion test. One of the questions he suggested was, is the CMO aware you're having these conversations? That will help us avoid putting too much control in the hands of the wrong person. And number four, when we are trying to get access to the CFO, don't use basic questions like, can I book a meeting with your CFO? Use labeling statements like the one Maddie gave. I often hear the CFO is the new CMO. Is that the same for you? Now, Nick, how can our listeners help us out today?
Folks, sometimes Armand and I sit down and we write down things that we've learned on 30 Minutes to President's Club. And then pretty frequently we email those learnings out to folks who have decided that they're not horribly, utterly opposed to getting emails from 30 Minutes to President's Club. And so if you'd like to get our written learnings from 30 MPC, there's a link in today's show notes to sign up for the 30 MPC newsletter. Promise it's moderately valuable and you may learn something here or there. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on the show.
This week's actionable prospecting tactic is from Sixth Sense, who shows you the prospects who are most likely to buy so you can get more meetings with fewer activities. Personalizing cold emails requires you to only change the first paragraph in a trigger template. All you have to do is tie the research to the problem you solve in paragraph one, and then switch that out while you leave paragraphs two and three, your solution and call to action, exactly the same. And so we are giving you six of these trigger templates with our partners at Sixth Sense. The link is in the show notes.
Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes.